Welcome to Off the Bench with Danny Cannell.
Back to throw, first and 10, the pass is deep to his tight end.
And Rajah Bell.
Bell has done three things. 22 for Rajah.
Saw the future of football right before your eyes. Just yell it out, man. He can't guard me.
What's up? Welcome to Cannell and Bell. Hanging on Tuesday. Monday Night Football was last night. We have to talk about that, unfortunately. My man Kirk Cousins had a rough night. You saw the D-Wade-LeBron game. We're going to bring that down a little bit. Did you tear up?
Well, D-Wade-LeBron? Yeah. I didn't even catch it.
Didn't tear up at all. And there's a new recruiting tactic that I can't believe is taking place. And also, there's more drama with the Bills. No shock there. Before we get started on the game last night. So this morning, I was getting ready. My six-year-old, she always comes in and she'll be like, what are you doing, Dad? Like, getting ready?
Yeah.
And she'll ask for everything that I do. So, like, if I have a little pomade for the hair, she's like, give me some.
Right.
Like, a little deodorant, she's like, give me some.
Right.
Cologne, like, give me some.
Right.
So she said, I'm getting ready, and she's watching me get ready, and she said, Dad, you look like a principal.
Yeah.
I was like, I thought I looked kind of nice today.
Right,
you know, but I guess I look like a little bit like a principal.
We got Professor Danny again.
I guess so, yeah.
Professor Danny Cannell.
I thought it was a good look.
It's good, like, dude, it's good look. It's a great look.
If you're listening to the podcast, you have no idea what we're talking about, make sure you go to CBS Sports HQ and flip it on, because we're on every single day at 10 a.m. You can watch us streaming online, so make sure you do that. All right. So I tried to push it off as long as I could. The Vikings were on the road, an opportunity to keep their playoff hopes alive, to kind of make a real strong statement after laying an egg last week against the New England Patriots. And guess what they do?
I know what they do. I've been telling you what they do.
They laid another egg, and there's no defense for it. Like, Kirk Cousins is quickly becoming a guy that's getting a reputation as puts up a lot of stats and games that don't matter, but when it comes time for the big moments, and whether that's against winning teams with teams over a 500 record or it's playing in prime time, it has not been pretty.
He's 4-24 versus winning teams. The stats are right there. 0-5 this year, 0-7 on Monday Night Football, and in prime time games, he's 5-13. You said it yesterday. Sometimes, right?
Yep.
Who'd you quote? Danny Green? You are what your record says you are, right?
Yes.
And look, I don't dispute the fact that Kirk Cousins is an upper echelon NFL quarterback. Like, if you're breaking it into the above averages and the below averages, he's in the very lower tier of the above averages for me. So
right.
He's an upper level quarterback, but that doesn't mean that you can win at the NFL level consistently enough to give your team a chance to vie for a championship.
Second highest paid quarterback behind Matt Ryan as far as guaranteed at signing. He's fully guaranteed the 3-year deal, fully guaranteed $84 million. That's part of it. If you're getting paid that much money, people have high expectations for you. You mentioned the tiers that he's in. He's still in. He's still playing the exact same way he did with the Redskins, which I've always been a fan of him. Like, he's top 10 in every category. Granted, he's like 9 or 10 in a lot of those categories, but passing yardage, touchdowns, completion percentage, he's actually like in the top 3 or 4. So he's getting it done statistically, but winning changes the perception of every quarterback out there. And some quarterbacks that aren't very good, because they win, everybody thinks they're real good, and then they're really not. And on the flip side, some guys like Kirk Cousins, I think he's better than what his record says he is, but at some point you have to prove it. You have to go out there and win games that people say you can't, and he's been able to do that.
First of all, Kirk Cousins finished the game last night with 208 yards. Most of those were in the fourth quarter when it really didn't matter.
Right.
Like, I watched that. Here's Kirk Cousins, when he got drafted behind RG3, I thought he was that lovable underdog. Like, you know, everybody knew that he could have probably got picked on another team. Like, he had good years at Michigan State, but they selected him. Once he got a chance to play, I felt like he had a chip on his shoulder that people kind of embraced. You would see him in the tunnels talking about how you like that or whatever his stick was.
The viral sensation.
But now I think, like, you lose perspective on that, right? Like, you
know what changes? $84 million.
No, yeah,
and look at you.
You start to become slightly entitled. The expectations for you change, and the way people perceive that persona that you have now flips from being like, he's the lovable underdog that keeps getting screwed by the Redskins, to like, yo, dog, you just got the $84 million bag. Like,
right.
what are you going to do for us?
Right.
And you know, they caught a clip. Will Brinson tweeted it last night. I heard it live, where he checked it down to Adam Thielen. Right. It was like a little screen pass. Adam Thielen got upfield and he yelled something to the effect of, yo, it's been there all effing day.
Right.
I asked you this when I saw Kirk Cousins not pick a lineman up. He strikes me as the type of dude that isn't the most well-received in his own locker room. I don't know why,
right,
but he just comes across like that to me. Maybe it's his face. Like, do you know what I mean? Like there are dudes with, like, his face. I don't know. Like, right, he comes across as a dude that people don't like.
I don't know, but he was also the same guy that was out there having fun with the stupid dance. They were, I don't even know what that thing was.
I don't know.
Dance, I don't know what it was. They were having some fun with that. But I think it's more concerning that Thielen's yelling. Last week against the Patriots, you saw Stephon Diggs coming over and getting animated that he wasn't getting enough balls, wasn't catching it. So I think, again, like, it just compounds the pressure on Kirk Cousins, the money that's out there. I gotta read you this tweet. But we have Emery Hunt on every Thursday for our picks. He might not be allowed back on. You know what he tweeted last night during the game?
Please tell me he shot me out.
No.
Because he knows how I get down.
No sign on this one. I can't imagine spending $84 million on something that doesn't work.
Boom.
I think that's a little harsh from a man, Emery. It's year one. He'll get more and more comfortable in this system as they go on.
True.
So I think, like, to say it's a bust now or to say it's not worth it. Plus, you're like, he's a franchise quarterback. Like, nobody's arguing against that.
I don't.
It's just he has not won the big game and he has to do that. I think it's similar to Clayton. Well, Clayton Kershaw is an insane pitcher. Like, he's one of the best pitchers in the regular season.
Right.
And then he has to get over this hump of the postseason woes. He can't get past him, even though he's had some performances in the postseason. So it's not like Kirk Cousins is the best quarterback statistically.
Correct.
And then he can't win the big game. So it's a little bit different.
Yes, he's a franchise quarterback. We can admit that $84 million guarantee was probably an overswing and overreach. This team earlier in the season, our whole thing was, well, their defense hasn't lived up to the hype. Their defense is rounding into form. Like now Seattle ran the heck out of the ball last night, which I'm sure we're going to get to, but they didn't have a whole lot of success in the air. They were getting after Russell Wilson a little bit. But so if you have this defense back, and you've got your offensive weapons back and you've just substituted Case Keenum for Kirk Cousins.
Yeah.
Like,
it's hard to explain. It does look like it's the quarterback because he's still working with the same weapons. They added Dalvin Cook, who wasn't healthy last
year. It is
on him.
It's fascinating.
Different play callers, they're calling things a little bit differently, but there has to be some point where you're like, all right, you got to get it done. Like,
yeah.
You have to get it done. So it'll be interesting to see how they finish out this season because I don't think it's been a total disaster yet, but it depends on how it finishes.
So is this one of the good losses for them? Like, because yesterday we went through all their good losses.
No, I'm
just saying. I'm asking.
It was on the road.
To a good Seattle team, a good loss. Another good loss.
At some point, you got to beat somebody because all the losses are turning out good. On the flip side, though, the Seahawks, I think, have been a pleasant surprise this season.
Yeah.
Their winning formula has been what got them to the Super Bowl, won a Super Bowl and got them back to it. It's because I think they got into the habit of, we have Russell Wilson.
Sure.
Top five quarterback. He can make it work.
Right.
And then he was out putting the team on his back last year. And they've said, you know what? That really isn't a model for winning. So they're rebuilding the defense, bunch of young players, and they're asking Russell Wilson to do a lot less, and they're running the football. And
yeah.
I think we've had a little bit of a correction in the NFL because we saw all these high flying offenses running around there, throwing it all over the place, putting up huge passing yardage, and all of a sudden we're seeing teams like the Bears knock off the Rams.
Uh-huh.
Defense and running. We're seeing Seattle emerge, defense and running the football. We're seeing Dallas Cowboys, defense and running the football. I think we've seen a little bit of correction, and I think there's a couple things about it. One, there's more tape on teams, so they're able to shut down. I think also weather becomes a factor. Like, it's not as easy. We saw Jared Goff struggle immensely in that weather. So, like, you have to travel, and that's where defense and run game always translate.
Yeah, if you can, in those cold weather scenarios, yes, this is a formula for winning. I do believe that it's been a pretty remarkable transformation from one year to the next. Like, with the amount of offense that Russell Wilson accounted for last year in Seattle was staggering. Like, it was unfair, you know? And to be able to put together a run game like this, not to mention the defensive side of the ball. When you lose the Legion of Boom and you've got all that stuff going on with, what's the dude's name? The safety, Earl Thomas and all of that, the distractions of that. You've now got a solid D and your DNA is back to running the ball, which I believe, is the recipe for that team. Not every team, but for that team. Here's the deal though. I do think that they have to find a way to get Russell Wilson a little bit more involved in the game.
Totally.
I don't think you can win against the upper echelon NFL teams when he's only throwing the ball like 20 times. You know, he's got to be involved because he is a top 10 quarterback, right?
You can't have the 29th best pass game.
You can't do that. That's not sustainable in terms of like playoff success.
But you know what's really nice is knowing that you have that in the back pocket. Like, you know, knowing that you could throw it and he could throw for 350 yards if you had to.
True.
Like, I think, but they do have to get more balanced, but that'll come. Like, if you're, that's the thing. If you're running the football, there's nothing more demoralizing for a defense than running it over them.
Yeah.
So why even risk it? Like, just keep hammering it down their throats and win that way. But I think that's the one good thing is that they do have Russell Wilson in the pass game in there. Although they're dealing with some injuries at the wide receiver position where they've kind of been dictated a little bit.
Yeah.
Where they have to run it more.
Dude, but, let me ask you, seriously, I was going to ask you. Doug Baldwin, like, yeah. I know he plays for the Seahawks.
Yep.
I don't know another wide receiver for the Seahawks. I don't. Like, well,
that's the problem they had ran into last night. So they got Tyler Lockett, David Moore, but they're not, these aren't names.
At least I know Tyler Lockett.
Across the NFL. Right, right. He's a name that you've heard.
Right.
But they are definitely thin at wide receiver, especially when you're talking about injury to Baldwin. So that'll be something they have to deal with. But actually, like, this is a team that, it's funny, like.
What do you think their ceiling is? Like, what do you think they're, like.
I mean, they've got to, see the thing.
Could they win a Super Bowl?
I don't think so. I don't think they can win a
Could they win a playoff first round
year,
game?
But in this year, like, really, if there's a couple, I still think the Rams and Saints, even though they're both the past couple weeks have not been special, I still think they're the cream of the crop in the NFC. I still think I would pick them to play in the NFC Conference
Championship
game. But we've seen crazy things happen. We've seen parity. We've seen that the Rams and Saints aren't exactly invincible. Like, I could see the Seahawks making a run. I would never bet on it or put money on it. But I could see them making a run.
So both teams in the NFC that they'd have to get through potentially that are just going to air it out, score a lot of points, take the air out of the ball, just pound it down their throat, right?
Yeah,
that's probably one of the best ways to...
That's what we saw the Cowboys do to the Saints when they played them a couple weeks ago. So, yeah, I think that would absolutely be the philosophy there. The Browns also have been having some recent success, which brings up, what do you do with Greg Williams? Interim coach. We saw his personality on Hard Knocks where he's a very, again, another alpha male type personality. I think they need a clean house. I think while you have the opportunity, I know they've had success. I know things are going better. They're 3-1 the last four games. Their defense has been playing better. Baker Mayfield's been playing better.
Yeah.
But I think that's more a result of Freddie Kitchens on the offensive side of the ball calling the plays than it is Greg Williams. And I still think this team has talent. Like, I think it's kind of speaks to how dysfunctional it was with Hugh Jackson. But I think you have to be real careful that you don't just say, oh, well, it looks pretty good here to finish the season and keep Greg Williams. Like, you better be 110% sure that he's your guy. And I just don't think there's any way they could say that.
Right. You would have to get, like, a ringing endorsement from multiple people, including Baker Mayfield, to retain Greg Williams. Greg Williams was the coach of the Bills for 3 years.
He was 20 years ago.
Right. He was 17 and 31. You know what I mean? And his personality is one that appears to have a shelf life. So, like, he's the guy that you can plug in at the end of a season and might be able to kind of rally the troops, tough guy you into a few wins. But eventually, that's going to start falling on deaf ears, kind of a la the Chicago Bulls situation, although theirs has gone the opposite way. But he seems like a short-term plan. If you can get one of these young, innovative dudes, you don't even have to be young. If he's an older dude who's got an innovative offensive mind that can help Baker Mayfield grow and be that number one pick, then that's the way you got to go. I don't know Greg Williams.
I think it's interesting because we're sitting here. We don't know the locker room, though. Like,
right.
Maybe the players love him. Like, I don't know this. I don't know. If that's the case and the players love him, then I think you evaluate it a little bit differently if you're John Dorsey. If there's, you know, if you just kind of caught this lightning in a bottle and the team's been winning, they're having fun just because Hugh's not there.
Correct.
That's more of my hunch that they've just been freed because they don't have
right.
this cloud of who's going to be our coach and a lack of respect for the coach. I think you have to explore the other options that are out there, but you better make sure you have the right option.
Yeah.
Like, and that's what I think is kind of a tricky situation because you want to make sure this is the hire. Like,
if he's
a laughing stock.
If he's your guy, you'll know. You'll have like 10 dudes coming into your office on just without being requested to come in and be like, hey man, I need to talk to you, man. Look, what this guy's doing is really special. Like, we really like him. Everybody's responding to what he does. I just felt like I needed to tell you that. Like, that's me as a player coming into the GM if I really feel like that's the guy.
Right.
If you're not getting that kind of feedback from the guys around him, and one of them ain't Baker Mayfield, then you need to keep it moving.
Exactly. And I think that's where these are one of those ones where I think this is the most important job of a general manager is you have to have a coach. You have to have a pulse of your team.
Right.
Like, what does your team, what are they saying behind closed doors? And that's where you kind of have to have your moles, like your leader,
yeah.
You kind of have a relationship. Bill Parcells was legendary with that. He'd have a couple favorites.
Yeah.
And those guys were in his ear telling him what was going on. And, you know, you kind of don't like those guys if they're your teammate.
Right.
You kind of feel like they're suck-ups and they're brown-nosers. but they are vital to a guy, you know, a leader in an organization. They're vital to the success and the decision-making process.
Ty Corbin tried to get me to be one of those for
Utah.
Oh,
he did.
His first order of business when he got the job, he was like, yo, I need you to be like my eyes and ears in the locker room. I need you to be like the conduit between me and the team. I'm like, yeah, dog, I got you. Don't worry about it. You're right.
Now, did everywhere, like, did you
beat it.
Mike D'Antoni? Did he have any other coach?
Nah, Mike and his staff had a good enough relationship with us. We were like one big family. It wasn't like the coaches and the players. It was just all of us. You know what I mean? And so they knew. It was transparent. Like, right, there was a clear flow of communication.
Ty Corbin wanted you to be a spy.
Ty Corbin wanted, I was a double agent on his behind, bro. Is, got you, bro.
That is messed up. I'm glad you did that.
The time has come for drag queens to save the world.
RuPaul's Drag Race All-Stars is back on Paramount Plus, and for the first time ever,
I want you to use your talent for good, for a change.
Eight iconic queens are competing for the charity of their choice.
This is how you do drag.
Who will slay it forward, win cash for their favorite cause, and a coveted spot in the Drag Race Hall of Fame? RuPaul's Drag Race All-Stars. New season now streaming exclusively on Paramount Plus. Go to ParamountPlus.com to try it free. Terms apply.
All right, welcome back to Canel and Bell. The Lakers and Heat played last night. LeBron and D-Wade, last time they matched up, they did the jersey swap after. Very emotional affair. I can tell you were impacted by it personally.
I could care less.
So,
ooh, like, seriously, why is it a...
It's a thing because of the success they had, because it's such a public friendship. Like, everybody knows about the bromance.
Okay, but you ain't a part of the friendship.
I agree, but people, like, fans, they love this type of stuff.
All right.
Or you hate it. Like, I don't love the fact that they're chummy after they're supposed to be on opposite sides of the ball. It's not like they're very competitive, though. So it doesn't bother as much in this situation, but when they played in the past, or when you see best buds playing in the playoffs and they're out there hugging before the game and at halftime and after the game, that bothers me somewhat. But I do think it is interesting the way they changed the game. Like, and when I say the game, I mean the NBA, because now you're seeing more often.
It's ridiculous, man. You just took four steps into it.
Hey,
all right, sorry.
Last game there. Let him do that. But I do think it's like they were the original ones who brought the big three together. They orchestrated this move. They recruited Chris Bosh to come join them. And I think it's become much more widely accepted, and other guys have tried to do it too. When you look at the Rockets, so that was a complete disaster. Chris Paul trying to bring his boy Carmelo Anthony in there.
Yep.
But I think it made it more acceptable to try to assemble these super teams from the players' perspective.
Yes, I think they get too much credit for that. While neither one of them gets too much credit individually, because they were both fantastic, and D-Wade's one of the top. You know, it's debatable, but he's a top 4 or 5 two-guard of all time, right? Like, you get some people say number 3. I've heard Heat homers say number 2. That's ridiculous. But he's a top 5 two-guard, so neither one of them gets too much credit individually. But for changing the NBA, look, they only responded. LeBron and D-Wade decided to super team in the East because the Boston Celtics had already super teamed in the East. You already had Big Ticket. You had, what's his name, Paul Pierce.
Yep.
And you had Ray Allen in their prime. Like, that is a super team. Now, none of them were the best player on the planet at the time, but they had already assembled like 3 top tier at their position all-stars, and no one was able to beat them for a minute in the Eastern Conference. And so that was the reaction. The Heat was a reaction to that. So I do think they get a little too much credit for shaping it, because the first domino to fall in the modern era in terms of the super team was the Boston Celtics, and their super team was a reaction to that.
Yeah, for sure. When I look at it, I get jealous when I see him. Not now, not last night, but when they actually got to play together.
Yeah.
Because I had a lot of friends that I met and played with in college, or, you know, college, not high school, because nobody went and played in college after
that. Right.
But in college, there were a lot of guys to play with to play in the NFL. When you get in the NFL, you play on a team for a couple years, you develop friendships, and you never get to pick and choose who you can play with.
Like, right.
We were joking yesterday about my fifth through eighth grade girls basketball team and how friends are trying to stay together.
Sure.
Like, sometimes you can manipulate it at that age, but rarely can you manipulate the system where you can play with one of your best friends at the highest level of the game.
Yeah.
But like, from that perspective, I'm kind of jealous.
No.
Because I would like Jake Plummer and I, who I backed up, we were like best buds. Like, we hung out all the time. He was at my wedding. Like, he's a great dude. We had a blast. Now, I got cut and they didn't ask Jake Plummer, like, if he was cool with that. He was upset about it. Right. I wish they would have. But like, from that perspective, I would have been fine being his backup for 10 years.
Correct.
You know, just hanging out with your bud.
So I can attest to this. Like, I played on a lot of teams and I had good times on all of them. And people always ask me, what was your favorite stop? And it was the Phoenix Suns for like No question about it. And part of it was because we were winning, but I had a chance. Like, Steve was one of my buddies. Like, I had played with him in Dallas, Steve Nash. And so when I had a chance to go to Phoenix, yeah, I wanted to win. The system looked great, but I knew I got a chance to play with Steve again. And, you know, the bond that we had and then thusly the rest of our team had together was what made that a really, really special time. So, like, winning and stuff is cool. We didn't win championships. Like, I am envious of that.
Right.
You know, I would have liked to have won championships like they did. But, man, they just had to have a blast. That had to be probably, if you would ask them, that those were the best times of their career. Sure, LeBron bringing a championship back to Cleveland probably holds a place in his heart. It's probably a special place for him, a special moment. But those Miami teams, I would bet, if you asked them, being able to play with your friend, travel with your friend, kick it with your friend, win with your friends, like, that's a special thing.
And not only that, but their significant others are tight, their kids are
absolutely
tight.
Absolutely.
Like, your whole life is just more enjoyable because you're getting to spend it with people that you care and love.
No doubt.
So it's pretty cool for that one. The Chicago Crybabies. I think that's a bad name for you because I think you dubbed that. You went in on them yesterday.
Crybaby Bulls.
And I was shocked. I thought you would have taken the player side a little bit more, but the drama is continuing because after the mutiny where, you know, only two players stayed out and actually practiced, the other rest of the team were like, nope, we're not doing it.
Yeah.
They had a meeting with Jim Boylan. They're supposedly put it behind him. Boylan said it was a great meeting. Like, said everything was good. We're moving in the right direction. Well, apparently not, because several Bulls players have actually reached out to the Players Association and have complained about what they believe to be, quote, extreme tactics used by Boylan. After taking the helm from fired coach Fred Hoiberg on Monday, Boylan held 3 2.5-hour practices in his first week that included extra wind sprints and players doing military-style push-ups. Calling for another lengthy practice after the back-to-back led to a near mutiny and caused the players to reach out to the union, sources said. My favorite part of this story is when they were playing the Kings and they lost 108-89. They led by 11 at half, and then they were outscored 63-33 in the second half. Dead legs, maybe. Maybe they're onto something. My favorite part of this is that the Kings players were walking back to their locker room after the game, and they were yelling and taunting them, saying, uh-oh, another 2.5-hour practice for them tomorrow. That's my favorite part of this story. The Kings were giving them a hard time.
You know when extreme tactics are necessary?
When you have a bunch of
when extreme losing is what's happening on your, your professional basketball players, if you keep rolling out there, and I know that Lauri Markkanen's been injured, Denzel Valentine's been injured, Chris Dunn has been injured, Bobby Portis has been injured, like, there have been a lot of injuries. Some of that speaks to maybe Fred Hoiberg, like, given a very short leash there. They should have probably allowed him to see what that team looked like, when he was healthy. But again, that speaks to maybe front office and ownership seeing just a bad mojo in the locker room. The result really not being the issue, but the mojo in general being the issue. But if you're a basketball player, football player, baseball player, whatever team sport you're on, and you're getting smoked like the Bulls are getting smoked, regardless of whether you're missing five good players, you're all still professionals.
Yeah.
You're getting rolled like that. What's a coach supposed to do with you? Supposed to practice you less? Is he supposed to come in there and bring you donuts? Like, what is he supposed to do with you? He's supposed to practice your little poop butts even harder than he's been working you. And that's just the way sports are. These dudes are so coddled. Again, from the time they are 10, 11 years old, they are recruited. Their families are recruited. Their promises are made. This didn't start happening to us until high school, Danny. High school and maybe mostly college.
Right.
This is happening at 10-year-olds now. They go to 1 year of damn college, right? They get everything they want there. Otherwise, you ain't going to that college. And then they kick them into the NBA. You don't think they're going to be snot-nosed brats?
They are definitely dealing with that. So I'm surprised this doesn't happen more often, though, the mutiny. Like, because I've been in a lot of locker rooms where nobody respects the coach. And usually you're able to be professionals because their paycheck's involved.
Right.
And you can, in the NFL, they'll cut you and your contracts aren't guaranteed.
Correct.
I think that's where the NBA players have more than anybody.
Sure.
Is there any rule? Because in NFL, there are specific rules about off-season training.
Yeah, no, there are.
Off-season practice, there are some. How many padded practices? But, like, do you think there's anything Boylan is doing that, like, just because they have 2.5-hour practices.
I don't know the letter of the law, but when we came into the league with Jerry Sloan, Larry Brown, those guys would practice you 2 hours in the morning, beat the hell out of you. You go home, you get a meal, you get a nap. 2 hours later, you come back, and they beat the hell out of you for 2.5 more hours. That's the way it went. And then the league
season.
No. This is training camp.
Right.
This is training camp. But in season, you practice as long as they wanted you to practice. You did your job.
Right.
If you were a good team, you practice less. If you were a bad team, you practice more. That's the way it went. The league did step in and put in some parameters in terms of what you could do in training camps. I don't know what the letter of the law says in season. 2.5 hours, it's a little long. It doesn't seem out of the – listen, an NBA player wakes up in the morning, he doesn't have a game, right? He practices at, let's say, 11 o'clock.
Right.
You have to be in, like, let's say
two
you get in there –
2.5 hours, you're done by 2 o'clock.
So you get in there –
showered and home.
Dude, you get in there at 9:30, right? You get your weights in, you get your extra shots up, you see the trainer. You go from 11 to 1:30, right? 1:30, you get your ice and stuff. You're at home by 2:30 at the latest with nothing to do for the rest of the day. What is your problem? Go there and practice. Do your job.
Extra wind sprints. Ooh.
Oh, sorry.
Or military style push-ups.
Dude, do you know? Listen, man. Oh, Danny, I want to just break everything in here right now. Look, we had a practice. We were in Phoenix. This was the same year I told you about last year. It was a miserable year for the Jazz, right? We were injured. But again, like, I know the Bulls are injured. You think Jerry Sloan cared that we were injured? You think Jerry Sloan cared that Mehmet Okor couldn't play or Carlos Boozer couldn't play? He didn't care. He was taking out the frustrations on the rest of us. We went to Phoenix, had a practice in some high school gym. We didn't touch a basketball. We, honest to God, at the professional level, did not touch a basketball. We were all hungover, right? Because
yeah, like, right?
We went in there and all we did was run for an hour and a half. Run, 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 run. And when we didn't run hard enough, he would stop it, yell at us and tell us about how if John Stockton was in the gym, he would have won every damn wind sprint. But that was what you did. And I have the utmost respect for Jerry. Did I love that all the time? No. But Jerry was a tough dude who was about winning. He was fair. And if we had been winning and doing our jobs right, guess what we wouldn't have had to do? All of them extra wind sprints.
But don't you think the players respected Jerry Sloan? It's where they
I love Jerry
they
Sloan.
They liked him, right.
I loved it.
I think this team has zero respect for Boylan, which is an issue because Boylan keeps going. Because Boylan doesn't have a resume like Sloan did. Boylan's going back to saying, hey, I coach with Pop. This is, you know, I know what it takes. But he hasn't done it himself.
Well,
I think that's why he's struggling so much.
Could be, but I would rebut with, what have you all done?
Right, exactly.
Chris Dunn,
one of the reports said that they screamed at him, you're not Greg Popovich.
You know what?
Such a lack of respect from the players.
It's ridiculous.
But what do you do?
Scream like back at them. You're not Michael Jordan. You're not Scottie Pippen. You're not B.J. Armstrong.
Right.
You're not John Paxson. Like, who the hell are – like, they? None of them have accomplished anything. And I don't mean to be – look, you're clearly good basketball players,
right.
Really good in some cases. But you haven't won anything. That man's job is to help steward you in the direction of winning. If the front office got it wrong, that will bear itself out. But for right now – he is the head coach, and you need to fall in line and do your job.
The thing that I hate about it is it totally feels like they did that move where they were winning at half, and then they were like, oh, we'll show him what it's having its impact on us. And then they went out there and played totally flat and not caring because they wanted to make a statement.
So you think that was statement second half?
Like, I think
we're
going to
shut this down?
Yeah, we're gassed.
That's a whole nother level of
exactly.
Like treachery.
But listen to all this stuff. They don't respect their coach. If I'm boiling, you know what I do? I have a team meeting, which they already had, and they said it was going the right direction. I said, you guys don't want these 2.5 hour practices? We'll give you off if you win. Every single time you win, you'll have off the next day.
That's it.
There's
yeah,
no
that's
better
compromise.
Motivational tool to professional athletes than giving them a day off.
I'm gonna be like, Adrian, you've seen him, you can't win. Like when she's talking to Rocky about Drago, that team's not rolling out beating many teams. But look, that would show a little bit of faith from the coach, right? If I was a player, like, okay, he's not just gonna kill me even if we win.
Right.
Here, the Bulls, right? Let's take it a step above the coach, like John Paxson and them. When he came in, he had Bill Cartwright, right? Kind of player's coach. Then you got Scotty Skiles, right?
Yep.
He's really like taskmaster. Then you go to Vinny Del Negro, player's coach, right? Then you go to Tom Thibodeau, taskmaster. Fred Hoiberg, player's coach. Then you go to Jim Boylan, taskmaster. Like, dude, you have to, what are we doing? Like,
right.
Who are we? What is the DNA of the Bulls? I feel like there's a lot of like a lot of swing in the direction of the franchise. And that's why I say, if you're always addressing the coach level and down and nothing really has changed over the last decade, at what point do you go to the level above that and maybe address some change there? I'm just saying, right? Like there's a lot of stuff going on and it speaks to, I think, a higher level of I don't know what the word I'm looking for is.
Dysfunction?
Dysfunction. Good
yeah.
word. Thank you.
And what, I mean, I don't think this is the last we hear of it. I'll be interested to see if the union responds and takes the player's side.
They better not.
It'll be interesting to see because I think this is definitely a story that's going to continue throughout the NBA season. So the Pittsburgh Steelers, I have been all over the map on this team this season.
Mm.
I think the Steelers are complete frauds.
Okay.
And so that's my final decision. Like,
okay.
I'm not going to go back. I'm not going to sway back and say, oh, you know what? They've got all this talent on that side of the roster. I totally ignored one of the basic tenets that I will not ever get away from. You have to have good leadership. You have to have consistency, and you have to have team chemistry. Like, those are some just basic tenets that I think you have to have a successful team. Leadership, I think, has been lacking from two people, from Mike Tomlin, and I think from Ben Roethlisberger. Two most important positions in that franchise that you have, I think they've lacked the leadership there. I think the chemistry in the locker room has been thrown off somewhat by the Le'Veon Bell situation, the uncertainty that was around that, guys calling him out. I guarantee you there are factions within that locker room, too, that say, I can't believe you guys threw Le'Veon on the bus. And there's other sides that are like, sure. Oh, he didn't come play for us. Like, sure. I guarantee you those have cropped up. And then consistency. Like, you have to be consistent. You can't be so up and down. And I know it's been an up and down season for a lot of teams, but this team, to me, just does not look like the real deal. And I think they're a mess. And I think they've had opportunities where – for instance, like when they beat the Jacksonville Jaguars on the road and they were down 16-0, they came back. In my mind, I was thinking, oh, they're a good team because they found out a way to win ugly.
Right.
Instead, I think I totally misread it and was like, they're an okay team that beat a bad team and that shouldn't have never been close.
Correct.
They found a way to win. It was a win ugly. And now they've lost three in a row. And so after the Broncos game, you had Ben throwing dudes under the bus.
Yep.
The Chargers just look like a better team. And then the show me game where you're contending for the playoffs, you're supposed to go and dominate a team like the Raiders. They get beat on the road. And I know it's on the road, but you're supposed to handle the Raiders by 10 points or more. I mean, at least that's what the spread said.
Yeah, that's one of the
good teams win, great teams cover.
Nah, but no, seriously, like you go on the road in a game, that you're supposed to win and you don't win in any league, especially like their bad team. Like the Raiders are a bad team. We're not talking about a decent team that you're supposed to be. We're talking about a bad team and you're supposed to be a really good team. You lose that game, something went wrong. And, you know, I would agree with you that I think it's an internal thing. I think that last year there was a lot of dysfunction with the Steelers and it was all projected like, you know, outwardly. There was a lot of media that caught wind of it. Those problems don't just go away. I think they did a better job this year of keeping them in-house, aside from the Le'Veon Bell situation, which was its own entity. It might have been the best thing to happen because, like, the Le'Veon Bell thing probably took the conversation away from all the other stuff that's probably going on in that locker room, right? And I think you can only keep that stuff in and keep playing despite it for so long. And to your point about, you know, Ben starting to chirp a little bit after the Denver game,
yeah,
that stuff starts to come out and it's been festering for a long time and it may just be catching up to you.
I can't believe because I was fooled by this theory that maybe Mike Tomlin, his teams thrive under adversity. Like they like the drama.
Right.
You can't have that. You just can't have that much drama. And if at some point when you hit adversity, when you lose to the Broncos, that's when you start seeing adversity affect you negatively and it becomes where you can't even overcome it. So that's why they've lost a couple in a row. And I get, like, to Ben's point, I guarantee their players are looking around that locker room after the, you know, a bad game he has and said, well, is he going to blame himself? Cause he's throwing that, you know,
yeah,
throwing
right.
Everybody else under the bus. Why isn't he throwing, you know, himself under the bus? All right, let's get to Hannah because, right, we're going to Socially Relevant, Coca?
Yes, we are.
Thank you.
Here we go, guys. All right, so we have another conspiracy theory in the NBA. You guys remember Kyrie Irving's flat earth theory, right?
Yep.
Okay, it's gotten
crazy.
Worse.
Crazy.
It's gotten worse. Now Steph Curry has got the hot takes. He appeared on Vince Carter and Kent Bazemore's podcast where he mentioned that he thinks humans never landed on the moon. He said, quote, we ever been on the moon? Apparently multiple responders then said nope. And Curry said, they're going to come get us. I don't think so either. Andre Iguodala was also on the podcast alongside Steph. So Danny and Raja, would either of you care to explain what's happening here?
I know a lot of people that don't believe we landed on the moon. Like, I do. My trainer, he's a good friend of mine,
right,
would give you, like, a laundry list of data and supported articles and videos, all attesting to the fact that we didn't land on the moon. I know multiple people like that. I do happen to believe that we landed on the moon. But I'm going to say, like, I don't know that Steph is in a, like, clearly he's in the minority, but I don't know how much of a minority they are. There are a lot of people that believe that.
But I think they're conspiracy theorists. And
yeah.
Some conspiracy theorists I tend to believe in. Here's the problem with YouTube. Well, both and I, like, my kids are on YouTube all the time. You can find a video that makes the case for any conspiracy theory. There's some pretty believable ones about the – and then if you – so have you heard the theory that Stanley Kubrick, the famous director of Clockwork Orange, he actually is the one who staged
directed it.
He directed the whole thing.
Yeah.
And if you look at some of those old videos, they do look kind of corny, like fake. The moon looks like a movie set. Like, I can see where it is. But my question to Steph Curry and anybody else who says they didn't, well, are we – like, what's the belief that no one's still been there? Because we have video now and we see astronauts talking from space and doing live interviews.
Right.
Like, Did you just not think it happened then, and then maybe the Russians did it first? Or, like, I don't understand.
What's the actual conspiracy?
Yeah, and like, where's the line drawn to where, or do you still think it's all one big sham and nobody's...
Where does it end? Right. Where does it end? Like, what are they... What's next? What are we going to stop believing next?
So I wonder, though, like, generally conspiracy theorists, if you subscribe to one conspiracy theory, then it's in your DNA, right?
Right,
like, so
right. You're believe them all.
So I'm going to, like, Steph, the more interesting question to me is, like, what other conspiracies do you believe in? Like,
right.
I'd want to know that. Are you?
Go watch the documentary on Stanley Kubrick,
yeah.
The moon landing, and then watch The Shining and see all the numerical things they put in there and the hints and clues.
You've watched this. Okay.
Oh, yeah. No,
all right. I got to check it out.
I'll say to Steph Curry, he needs to go tell Buzz Aldrin about it because Buzz Aldrin, one of the astronauts that landed on the moon, punched a dude, a moon conspiracy guy, because the guy was telling him he didn't land on the moon. So he punched the dude. So I want to see Steph go do it to Buzz Aldrin.
Wait, so are there any conspiracy theories that you guys firmly believe in?
No.
No, none?
Rodney, you defended,
I will never say never. I will never say never.
No, I mean...
JFK shooting one, I'll believe anything on that.
Yeah, I mean, there's stuff that, like, I'm not sure of what happened, but, like, real conspiracy theorists, like... You know, like with the towers and
right,
all that stuff, some of that stuff. Like, I don't subscribe to any of them. You could pitch me an idea on some things and I'd be like, you know what, Hannah? I tend not to believe most things I hear. Like, I'm always a little bit skeptic, right?
So. Debo got me hooked on a conspiracy theories podcast. That's pretty good. And they have all these, like, there's 100 podcasts on various conspiracy theories. Every single one, they like make you think about different things you assumed were true.
All right.
Raja, I got you, though. I have some celebrity gossip that I believe is never true. So we can join forces on that one.
All right.
Some conspiracies behind that one. Okay, over to a different form of education, guys. We're talking video games now. So when you're a player who joins a team midway through the season, there's a lot that you have to learn. And quarterback Josh Johnson is being honest about the way that he studies his team. So after Washington's 40-16 loss to the Giants, Johnson told reporters that he played Madden to help him remember his teammates' names.
Fantastic.
He said, quote, coming in on a short week, you learn there's so many moving parts. But for me, I play Madden. So I was able to get on Madden and learn my teammates' names. So Washington is the 12th team that Johnson has spent time with since he was drafted in 2008. Danny and Raja, this isn't that bad of an idea, is it?
It's a great idea.
It's got to be tough.
You had a cakewalk. You only to go on a new team, you got like 12, 13
guys, correct.
You have 53 players. You got 7 or 8 practice squad. You got coaches all over the board. But the most important thing you want to learn so that you save your butt is the playbook. And you have to spend all your time studying the playbook. So the last thing you're worried about are names.
Right.
I've been in huddles before where I didn't know some of the offensive.
What was your go-to for not knowing a guy's name? Like, what was your greeting? Bud?
Yeah, probably bud or bro or
bro,
dude.
Yeah. I'd be like my guy, my dude, dog.
Exactly.
Like, yeah. That's
well,
how I just.
Bobby Bowden famously didn't know like half the roster at Florida State.
That's
so it was always, hey, buddy. Hey, buddy. And then you got older and you thought he knew your name. If he used buddy, you're like, does that mean he doesn't know me? Or is that just like his
is that what? Right.
Yeah, like he definitely didn't
That's
know.
That's interesting. Who is Josh Johnson?
All right, so everybody has loved the Jimmy Butler to the 76ers move. They've been playing better, although he did get hurt his groin.
You know who really loved it? Karl Anthony Towns and Andrew Wiggins.
They loved it the most because they didn't have the dude over them. But Joel Embiid was one guy who has not been frustrated with the move, but frustrated with the transition. So he had some comments to Philly.com that are pretty interesting. He said, I haven't been myself lately. I think it's mainly because the way I've been used, which is I'm being used as a spacer. I guess a stretch five, which I'm only shooting 22% from 3-point range. But it seems like the past couple games, like the way I play or set up, Coach Brown always has me starting on the perimeter, and it really just frustrates me. My body feels great, and it's just I haven't been playing well. We sometimes have to space the floor a lot of time. Actually, with the way our plays are set up, I tend to spend a lot of time on the perimeter, so it's an adjustment.
Stop.
Brett Brown responded, said, I don't want to connect those dots, but I think in general we all have to do a better job creating space for Joel.
Look, there's going to be a period of adjustment where everyone's trying to figure out how they can be the best version of themselves when you integrate a piece like Jimmy Butler, who is a very good player and is going to command the ball in a way where you will make concessions with other pieces on the floor to get him the ball where he wants it. He's that good of a player. You wouldn't do that for everybody. Like, you're not doing that for just your average player. But for a Jimmy Butler talent, I'm going to ask the other four guys on the floor to maybe play out of position for a minute so Jimmy can get it where he wants it.
Any problem with Embiid speaking?
I do. I don't know.
He's an immature player. I think he's like a social media. It's fun, but I think the way he yaps with other players, I think he's immature, and I think this was just an immature statement.
No, I talked to Debo, and Debo's hope is that he means – He's just disappointed in the way he's playing. Mm-hmm. And if that is his sentiment, then I'm okay with that. But then say that. Like, really, whenever you come out and talk about being frustrated with what's happening within your organization, like, that's something that shouldn't be aired to the media. Like, that's an in-house thing. Like, that's a coach-player talk. Hey, coach, listen. Like, I would do it with Mike D'Antoni sometimes. Like, Mike, you know, I feel like I'm going through the whole first quarter, and, you know, I'm not getting a touch. And then, you know, when I come out in the second quarter and I start getting all these touches, like, I'm not in the rhythm of the game. And so Mike would work that out. Even though I was like the fourth or fifth option on that team, you know what Mike would do? He'd start the half or start the quarter by calling a play for me just so I could get one in the air and I felt better. And whether he thought that gave us the best chance to win or not, he knew it helped me mentally. Yeah. And that was his job. So those are conversations that you have with him, not with the media.
Exactly.
Bro.
See, that's where I think it's the young player mistake, immature mistake, is now that you've aired this out, like, there's no problem with you being disgruntled with the way your role is fitting in the team. Go to Brett Brown.
Sure.
Go to Jimmy Butler. He's the leader of the team, and say, hey man, what can we do differently? Like, is there anything I can do better? Don't do that.
Well,
don't do that. You don't want to mess with that.
No, but I mean, like, if
we're an assistant coach, anybody but the media.
But the media. Like, yeah. So here's another question for Embiid, right? Like, you were 28.3 a game maybe when Jimmy wasn't there. You're down to like 23.2. Like, shooting percentages on all of those have dropped a bit. It begs the question, like, do you care more about the 28.3 or the wins? Like, do you want to be a 28.3 and 13 guy on a team that gets knocked out in the first round of the Eastern Conference playoffs? Or do you want to be a 23.10 rebound guy that may shoot 5% less from the field on a team that is in the Eastern Conference championship? And that's
totally
a real question.
But here's the whole issue. If he never says this to media, we're not asking that question. But because he did, it makes us all wonder.
Absolutely.
Like, what are you thinking? Like, is that why you're complaining? Is that why you're not happy? So that's why I keep your mouth shut.
Look,
one instance.
I will always say this. I know this is my job now, and I know, like, but athletes in general, people care about what you say to some degree, right? Mm-hmm. But for your career, it's not a good idea to be airing your business in the streets, even if it's good stuff, even if it's not negative. I know it helps build your brand and all of that stuff. And so, like, from a business perspective, but purely an on the court, what's happening in your locker room or with your organization, airing anything is bad. That stuff's a family. It's in-house.
Thanks for listening to Kennell and Bell. Download and subscribe to us anywhere podcasts are found. Make sure you leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts and let us know what you think of the pod. And while you're at it, you might as well follow us on Twitter @Kennell and Bell.